And listen hard if you invited me, but couldn't be here today. It's a pleasure to be back. It's like I'm traveling back in time, right? And fitting with the scene. This is a joint work with Rafael da Silva, who is a PhD student back in Brazil, where I am, and with Elvin Cachetti, our colleague, now at the University of Edinburgh. So you can read more about this in this archive preprint. It's a short paper, but we're probably going to post a longer version pretty soon. So it seems a lot to fit into a single seminar, right? It's closed time like curves and measuring this for computation. So let's see how we're going to do that. So first I'll start talking about closed time like curves, which is just a jargon for time travel. Okay? Then I'm going to describe a model which is highly influential. People have been discussing it a lot. For time travel quantum mechanics, which is due to Deutsch. Then I'm going to show up how, when you're analyzing some measure-based quantum computation protocol, actually CTCs, time travel, show up there. Okay? And then I'm going to, of course, try to see whether these CTCs fit in with Deutsch's model or not. And we're going to see that they don't fit in so well. But there's another model which was proposed by Bennett, Schumacher, and Svetlishin, which fits in well with the CTC that appear measured in quantum computation. So I'm going to describe this model, and then I'll conclude. So, if we're talking about time travel, we can, of course, what people, usually not physicists, right, our friends describe. What? You're saying time travel? How can we travel to the future now? That's so boring. We don't even bother talking about it, right? Because we know we can use relativity to travel to the future. So when I talk about time travel, it's not about time travel to the future. It's always about time travel to the past, which is something which is more complicated, right? So what do we know about that? We know that relativity has some solutions to Einstein's equations, which predict closed time-like curves, that is, paths that go back and interact with themselves in the past, right? So many people have studied them, and it's not clear whether there could be some reason that forbids them from existing, or maybe not. So this is not known, okay? So in order to construct such solutions, some people have proposed some stuff which is very complicated, right?
Which usually involve engineering of black holes, right? So some complicated rotating black holes, cylindrical black holes, and stuff like that. Also, when people study these solutions, they notice that in order to avoid paradoxes, like going back in time and killing yourself in the past, killing your grandfather, you know, to cut the evil at the root, in order to prevent that from happening, then you have to impose some self-consistent conditions, right? So if you're alive now, you can't go back and kill your grandfather. So we're going to talk more about that later. So I'm not going to distort space-time, construct black holes, wormholes, and stuff. I'm just going to talk about the constraints that time travel imposes on quantum mechanics and how you can study them, okay? So this is a very simplified version of time travel in which you have an entrance to this place, this zone in space-time where you're going to travel back in time. So you go through some interaction with somebody, okay? And then at some point in time, there's a flash, whatever, you go back in time, and suddenly you see this other guy and interacting with them, right? And then that's it. That's what happens, okay? So this is a little virtual representation of what it would mean to go back in time and interact with yourself. So one story that Ben Schumacher tells about this kind of picture is something like that. You were walking the street and suddenly you see a guy, and this guy looks very dangerous and annoyed, and looks a lot like you, actually. And he kicks him, I mean, hits him in the face, hits me in the face, okay? So I get very annoyed, of course, and suddenly there's a flash, and I'm in the same street, and I see the guy who hit me, okay? So I hit him back, and I go away, okay? So this is one way of traveling in time, and you see everything self-consistent, okay? So that's one way to see how these interactions can go. At this region here, you're going to have two copies of the person or the system which travels in time. So we can twist this curve a little bit, if you want, instead of having interaction V, you can have interaction U, which is the V interaction. It's the U interaction preceded by this swap. Okay? So if you swap the wires here, right, you're exchanging the identity of this guy on top with this guy on the bottom, and then you get a picture like that. Okay? So some people, when they talk about space, travel in time, they look at this figure here, in which you have a line that curves on itself and goes back in time, and one line which goes in and out straight. Okay? This is not different from this one. You can see exactly the translation, right, through this picture here. Okay? So it's two different ways of talking about the same phenomenon, if this phenomenon exists, right, of course. Okay, so now I can introduce the model that was discussed by Deutsch in this paper here from 1991. So Deutsch's model, let's have a look at the model, how it goes for two qubits. Okay, you can do it for larger systems as well. So you have this interaction zone here. It's going to be in the interaction of two qubits, of course. So there's this qubit that comes in here, and there's this qubit which does this closed time-like curve here, this time loop, time-like loop, okay? So this U is a two-qubit unitary. And how does Deutsch analyze what's going on there, okay? What do you do? You start with the state that you're going to assign to the CTC qubit, that is, the closed time-like curve qubit that travels back in time. So we start with a given state here. You're going to have to find out what conditions there are on this state, okay? So we start with a free state that can be a density matrix, tensor rho n, which is the state, the entrance state here. So we start with this tensor product. You apply these unitary, okay? So you evolve the density matrix like that. And now comes the key to the model. You impose a self-consistency condition. So let's have a look at what we have here. Here is the output of this state coming in as input being evolved in time by unitary U. Now you're tracing over B. B is this time-respecting qubit, the lower qubit. And then, of course, if you get this evolved density matrix at this point in time, and you trace out this state, this system, then you get, of course, this, the final state of the CTC qubit. And what the self-consistency condition is saying is that this state here has to be the same as the state here. That's the new constraint, okay? So you can start doing the calculation with the free state here. But when you impose this condition, you're saying not any state is going to work, right? You're going to impose that the state here after the interaction has to be the same as the state here before the interaction, as the state back in time. Okay, that's what Deutsch quotes. Yeah.
In your base of this condition, all you need are...
Okay, yeah, so... Some people have talked about starting with a state which is entangled, okay? There are some arguments. I mean, it's not so more difficult to start with a different state. We're gonna see more about the entanglements that can happen between these two systems. It's actually going to be important for the difference between the two models that I'm going to discuss, okay? Some people have... There are different things that you can do. One thing would be to talk about entangled initial states. But the motivation for this is to say that in most of the space-time, it's time-preserving. And then there's a small region in space-time where you have these loops. So this small region would be this thing. And then you would start with a state like this, because this state has never interacted with the time loop, which is localized somewhere. So that's one motivation maybe for getting an initial state which is disentangled. Yeah, I haven't really tried, okay? So what we can prove, I mean, what Deutsch proved for this model, starting with the separable state, is that, first, there is always at least one self-consistent condition. So that's an important thing for the model, okay? So he says that no matter what rho in you throw in, there is always one rho CTC that satisfies this condition, okay? It's a function of rho in, okay? This rho CTC that satisfies this condition. It's clear to see that it's a function of rho in, because here you start with rho CTC and rho in, and you scramble all together with this unitary, right? And then you trace out. So, of course, there's some information about rho in that went into the problem, okay? So Deutsch showed that there is always at least one solution. But he showed also that there can be more than one solution. So it's nice that there are solutions, but it's not so nice that there are multiple solutions. Because then you have to think about how are we going to pick from those solutions? Okay, is there a better solution than others or not? Question, yeah?
That ultimately it comes down to find the complete positive map associated with row in for the ancilla and U, and then find the fixed point set of that map.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Exactly. Okay, and when you find the fixed state point, you put this fixed state point back here,
and you see what happened with the whole state and what the output was. Right? So the fixed point depends on the input state and the solution, which is the map. I'm interested in the map between this row and this row in, row out. It will also depend on the fixed state, fixed point solution. Right? So that's how you do the calculation. But the problem is there can be many such fixed points. Okay? So there can be many solutions. And each solution, in general, corresponds to a different map between this guy and this guy. So now the things are not so well defined. You have to say, why do you pick one solution and not another one? Okay? Deutsch kind of goes around the problem. He says, maybe we should pick the solution with a largest entropy. Dev is kind of doing like that. Okay? So Deutsch says, maybe we should pick the solution for rho CTC, which has the largest entropy. Right? Or maybe the solution depends on the initial conditions of the wormhole that's being described by this process. Right? So different initial conditions would correspond to different solutions. I mean, it's not so nice. I mean, this is the part of the model that's kind of underdetermined, right? But this is kind of this is the Deutsch model for CTC, okay? So some characteristics of the model. It avoids paradoxes. The fact that it avoids paradoxes, I mean, why do we say that? Because for any input and any interaction, there is a fixed point to the dynamics, right? So Deutsch comes up with some solution for any input and any interaction you care between the input and the CTC. So even things that you might think would be paradoxical, actually Deutsch solved. But the rho CTC, the traveling in time qubit, may be mixed. And this mixedness allows you to sorts your problems. And then there's this problem, right? We're not sure about how to pick when there are many solutions, and that's the general case. Well, one thing that people... So this is a view of time machines in the context of quantum mechanics, and it's been a very influential paper. So all these results are people who are using this model, okay, Deutsch's model, to see what does the model say about computational power, okay? Suppose that quantum mechanics allows for this kind of time travel. What does it give you computationally? So Bacon showed or argued that you could solve NP-complete problems. Okay? Todd Brun and all showed that you can distinguish non-orthogonal states. Okay? And these things, they come about because the map that happens between rho in and rho out is a non-linear map. So the presence of the CTC, when you solve the fixed point condition, which is the consistency condition, imposes a map on rho in, which is nonlinear. So many things that you get from nonlinear extensions of quantum mechanics, you get here, because it is a nonlinear extension to quantum mechanics. I have a question?
Yeah, just going back to the thing about avoiding paradoxes. Classical physics, that you will sometimes get paradoxes, and it's a special feature of the quantum case that you don't, and that's because you've always got these mixed states available.
Exactly.
So you can do some kind of fixed point theorem.
Exactly. Classically, you can avoid the paradoxes by picking a consistent solution, a self-consistent solution.
But then you have some boundary condition, and you have to start with the right initial conditions.
Yes, and then you have to say, what mechanism gives me the right initial conditions? So Deutsch was very popular because it says, just go to quantum mechanics.
Yeah, yeah.
And now, mixed state solves one for you. So that was one appealing thing about the Deutsch model. Okay. So these things become possible because this is a nonlinear map. Okay. So Aronson and Watson
show that quantum mechanics plus CTC solve any problem in p-space, which is a very, very broad complexity
class in which you just restrict that you need to use polynomial space. You can do use as much time as you care. Okay, so it's very, very broad. Includes in B, includes lots of stuff. Okay. Well, Charlie Bennett and Debbie Young and other people are in this paper. I think they criticize these results. Okay, by having a more careful look at the Deutsch model, and arguing that, for example, if you want to distinguish non-autonomous states, you have to frame the question very carefully. You have to say there is a referee, and he's going to feed the states to this machine. And afterwards, it's going to check whether the states were distinguished or not. Okay, but the solution to Deutsch's time travel machine, they get decorrelated from what's going on, because you get a mixed state here that is fed back in time here. So this loss of correlation between the states that go in the machine and come out of the machine spoil your discrimination procedure. That's more or less what I got from your paper. You can comment on that. So it's a criticism of the way that the model is used to implement these tasks. Okay, so it's not so clear. I mean, you need this extra work to see how to use the model in a meaningful way for these tasks. And when you analyze this more carefully, then you get into trouble. That's more or less the other thing. And then there were some criticisms of the criticism. And criticisms are the criticisms to many others, okay? And many other people who are interested in this. So there's a little flurry of papers dealing with the computational power of this model. Okay? Yeah. Oh, it's not a question. Okay. I was going to ask, are you in this paper too? So, okay. So I'm not going to discuss that much about Deutsch, because Deutsch model is not actually the main model that I want to talk about here. Okay, I just give you an example, and it's an example that's going to show up again in the future. Okay, so this is the little Deutsch box with the row of CTC, the traveling time qubit on the top, row in and row out here at the bottom. And here I decomposed, I put three gates inside this box, the U box. It's a swap gate, it's a control Z gate, and it's a J theta gate, which is a one qubit gate. Okay, it's convenient. You can decompose any set of any circuit you can decompose in control Z and J theta gates. Okay? It's a universal set for quantum computing. So it's a convenient set when you talk about measure-based computation, so that's why I'm using this model. So how do you do the Deutsch calculation for this? You parameterize row n with this block vector m. Okay? This is a vector in the block ball. You parameterize row CTC with this vector m. And you parameterize row out with the vector r. So you want to find the net between m and r, right? Row in and row out. So how do you do that? You impose a self-consistency condition. So you have actually to evolve this input state with row CTC. You evolve using the zinnivary. You take the trait, and you impose that this state that you started with has to be the same as the state you end here, row CTC. So when you do that, you find that these are the equations of this model that need to be satisfied, okay? And then we see that the map that you get, which is the solution to these three equations, is a map in which the rho CTC, the traveling qubit, has to be in this state, where n, of course, is the z component of the input vector. And rho out has to be of this form. Okay, the vector, the block vector. So what happens here, you see that it's a nonlinear, very clearly nonlinear model map, because you get a square of the z component of the input state into the output state. By doing something like that a few times over, you can distinguish non-orthogonal states and so on. That was the original idea. Okay? Well, here, I just point out that the solutions to these equations, this is the generic solution. But if you have exactly this input state, okay, the plus theta state, then you have an alternative solution as well. So this is an example of those multiple solutions that appear. In this case, there is only one input state that admits two solutions, either this one or this one. Okay? So there are two solutions for this particular input state. In general, depends, of course, on the unit pair you get here. You can get multiple solutions for many different input states as well. This is just for one. So this is how a worked out example of how the Deutsch model calculation goes. Okay? And we see very clear that it's a nonlinear process. So now, it would be nice if you could test Deutsch model, right? Because Deutsch model is this, right? It's just drawings and calculations on a paper. It's a theory, right? So it would be nice to test that. But of course, to test that, what are you going to do? You're going to create a wormhole and throw a spaceship in it and see what comes out, you know, and analyze the map and implement it. It's kind of tricky, right? So maybe you can do something with a different technology, right? Or maybe you can try. But it's not so easy. So nobody has been able to create one of those in the lab. So you can't go and test it experimentally. Okay? So how can we test if the model is sound? Right? If it's not with an experiment. So what we're going to show during the rest of the talk is that measurement-based quantum computation offers an answer to that. Okay? That's the claim. So I'm not going to explain all of measurement-based quantum computation. This is just one slide to remind you of the main characteristics of it. It was proposed by Hausendorff and Riegel in 2001. And of course, it's related with the model of gate teleportation by Gottesman and Schwang from 1999. And it's been studied by lots of people since. By Devlian from here, Robert Hausendorff, who was here too in PI for a while. And basically what do you get? How does it work? You start with an entangled state, which is a standard entangled state that will be used for any calculation you care to do. Okay? It's called the plus state. Then, it's a highly entangled state, but it's easy to create. Okay? You just need pairwise neighbors interactions, which is a Heisenberg type interaction, between all qubits. And then you create this state. Afterwards, all you have to do is one qubit measurements in a certain sequence. Okay? And these measurements, the measurements you do, may depend on outcomes of previously measured qubits. So you start with the standard state, you start measuring some qubits. Depending on the outcomes, you're going to change the measurement basis of the future qubits you're going to measure. So you go adapting your measurements until you measured everything. When you do that, the outcomes that you get are encoded in the solution to your problem. So it's very, very counterintuitive that this should work. Okay? So the computational resource is the correlation that you get in this initial entangled state. And the algorithm, I mean, what you're going to calculate, it's just encoded in the sequence of measurements that you do. So if you do one sequence of measurements from this standard entangled state, you do Shor's algorithm. If you do some other, you do Grubbers or whatever, your favorite algorithm. Okay, so this is just a reminder. Please don't ask me about the details of this model. I'm going to work out just one example, which can be used for my arguments here. Okay? So this is a very simple example. You start with an input state here, pure state, alpha 0 plus beta 1. Okay? This is a plus state, 0 plus 1, and you entangle them via control Z operation. Okay? Now, you're going to measure the top qubit in the basis plus or minus theta, which are these two vectors here on the equator of the Bloch sphere. So you measure, do a measurement that distinguishes these two possibilities, okay? If this top possibility appears plus theta, you call the outcome of the measurement zero, and if this other state comes out of the measurement, then you call this outcome one, okay? So basically, you entangle the two states, you measure the top one, and you want to implement a map on the bottom one. That's what you want to do. Okay? If you measure the top one, you can do the calculation. If you measure the top one and you get the outcome zero, that is, you obtain this projection, the top one, then the bottom one is going to be this state. And you have implemented J minus theta on the input state. The input state starts here, the output state is here, down here, and this is the map that was implemented. But you could have got the one outcome, right? If you do that, you don't get the same map, but you can correct it, right? So what I do here, I do a control X on the outcome. So if you get the one outcome here, you implement an X gate, and you get exactly this statement. So no matter what you get, if you get the zero outcome, you don't need to do anything to the bottom qubit.
If you get the one outcome, you need to correct with the next, and your outcome, your qubit will have undergone this map, a unitary map. Okay? This is the very simplest case of a gate implemented by a measurement. Okay? Now, I'm going to do some tricks with that little circuit, with this little example of one-way computation. Okay? So, this is one way of representing what I did in the circuit there. Okay? So, now, the sequence of operations is, of course, from right to left. So, we start with the input state, tensored with plus state. We implement a control Z. You can just read it here, from the left to the right. Then you do a measurement of the top qubit of these spaces. And you correct the second qubit only if the measurement came out as 1, the outcome 1. Okay? If it comes out as 0, actually 0 is identity, you don't need to do anything. So this is just a representation for what we did. Okay? So we can either do the circuit like this, or we can do it like this. Because here, what we did is, we implemented this classically controlled X operation as a coherent X control X, okay, before doing the measurement. And also here, I just have a little box saying I'm measuring on these spaces, right? What I did here was I turned that box into a unitary, right, that together with the Z measurement implements that measurement over there. So if I wanted to measure everything in the Z basis, I need to do the proper unitaries here, right, in order to discriminate in these spaces. So these are the two changes I did from here to here. But the map implemented between here and here is the same. Okay? So the two circuits is the same. I'm going to say that two circuits are equivalent whenever they implement the same input, the same input-output map. Okay? So that's what I'm interested in, right? In measurement-based computation, to implement the right map by doing other things. Now I want to show you that this simple example of measurement-based computation has embedded in it a closed time-like curve. Okay? It doesn't look like it, right? So let's see how it goes. I just reminded you of those equations I have written there. And now I'm going to show to you, using stabilizers, of the initial state G, which is this state you get here. Okay? So this state G, you can work out that it's stabilized by these two operators. Well, the top one is just a fancy way of saying identity. Okay, so any state is stabilized by identity, because identity times the state is the same state, right? So, but it's also stabilized by this operator, which is z on the top qubit, tensor x on the second qubit. Okay, so this state is stabilized, which is the state at this point here, just before the measurement. It's stabilized by the operator z1 x2. Why am I saying this? Because since you can say that z1x2 to the power 0 or z1x2 to the power 1 are stabilizers, you can actually write these two things in one sentence, saying that z1x2 to whatever bit has 1, no matter what it is, stabilizes this thing. Okay? So this is the key for the manipulation that I do now. Because here I start with the sequence that is equivalent to this, right? Measure the top, correct the bottom, right? But now I rewrite G like this because I know that this state stabilizes G no matter what number S1 you have. And when I do that, of course, these X2 to the S1, X2 to the S1 can move here, and you cancel that. And what remains is measurement. In this sequence, okay, I have to apply an operation on the first qubit depending on the outcome of the measurement on itself. Right? So this is a kind of weird equation here. Because I'm saying it's like a time travel thing. Okay? Because I'm saying I need to apply Z on the first qubit, but I need to apply it only if when I measure it, I obtain the outcome 1. That's kind of weird, but it came out from this here, using this stabilizer, formally. Right? So it's a formal stabilizer manipulation
that gives me something that looks like time travel. Okay? Now I'm going to turn this into exactly the kind of time travel that we saw. Okay? To make it more explicit. So, first, I translate what's written here as a circuit. So, here's what I said in words, right? I need to apply Z to the first qubit, depending on the outcome of the measurement on itself. So here, if I measure itself and it gets 1, and it measures 1, I need to do a Z before I did the measurement. So that's this classical thing to the past, right? So this is the first, it's just a representation of what I was explaining this means, right? Now, I can translate this classical control to the past to a quantum control to the past, right? It's just the coherent, turning a measurement coherent as opposed to a classically controlled operation, which you can always do in a second. Now, this starts to look weird, right? There's this something, the state in the future controlling the state in the past. Now, I can redraw this to make it look like exactly like a CTC, right? Because listen to what the information is encoded here. The qubit, how you would explain this? The qubit is controlled by somebody in the future, here. Undergoes a J-gate and controls itself in the past. If you have a look at what's going on here, it's the same thing. The qubit is controlled by somebody. Undergoes a gate and controls itself in the past. So this is the same representation of this one. It's just one that makes it easier for you to spot a closed time-like curve in this circuit. Okay? Now, if there is a closed time-like curve in the circuit, let's use Doyle's model to see what the predictions are. Okay? So I drew a big Deutsch box, which is a border to calculate, okay, in 3 qubits. One traveling time and 2 knots, but you can do a little box here. The results are not different. You just put this big box here and impose the consistency condition for these input states to see what map is implemented, okay, by this big U box, Deutsch U box. When you do that, you get consistency conditions. And the consistency conditions, I'm interested in the row in, row out map. Okay? The row out comes out as this state, okay? Which is in general mixed. If you start with a row in that's mixed as well, it's a mixed state in the output. So that's the Deutsch calculation, what it says. Now we can compare what Deutsch predicts and what measurement based quantum computation predicted. Okay? Because I came out with this example from a measurement based quantum computation that actually implemented a unitary. So you can already see that Deutsch is not going to be the same thing. Because Deutsch says that the map is between a row-in state, which is general, to this row-out, which is quite different, and it's in general mixed. It truncates the state, right? And you just end up with the Z component there. That's what Deutsch predicts. But we saw that the one-way model predicts that when you do things like that, you get a map between psi-in and psi-out, which is a unitary map. So you get a pure state, goes into a pure state, which is J minus theta of the input state. It's just a unitary gate applied to the input. Okay? So this is clearly different from what Deutsch predicted. Okay? So there's a conflict there. So there's a conflict between the prediction of the one-way model and the CTC that we saw appears in the one-way model and Deutsch model. So what's wrong with Deutsch? Okay? That's why we want to understand that. Where did it go wrong? Okay? So, this is a model, I want to discuss this other model by Bennett, Schumacher, and Zetlisch. Okay? So, this is a model that was proposed by Bennett Schumacher as early as 2002. You can get a similar slide by Charlie Bennett discussing this model in 2002. Okay? And this model was rediscovered in different ways by many different people since. This paper gives a very clear explanation of the model. Appeared last year in the archive, but there were other papers written in the context of studying the black hole information paradox that describes something which is very similar to this model described by Charlie Bennett. Okay? and there's a discussion of that in this paper by Frasca and Grossman, always referring to an unpublished result by Schumacher and Betts. Okay? But if you see the transparencies, they're very clear. So the model is spelled out there. Okay? So what's this model for time travel? Here we have the view of time travel that I've been presenting to you. Somebody comes, goes back in time, interacts with itself, and comes out. Right? How do you do that, according to Bennett and Schumacher? You do it using teleportation. Okay? So you can follow the same lines here in this representation. See? The information going back in time and going forward in time. But what are these boxes? Here you prepare a maximum entangled pair of qubits. And here you have to do a projection on this, of these two qubits into the same state that you prepared here. 0, 0, +1, 1. Okay? So this is what the model tells you to do to simulate time travel. And why is it simulating time travel? Because imagine just this part from here to here, okay? If you get a qubit, you do a joint measurement onto the bell basis with a bell pair, one leg of an linear pair. This is teleportation, right? If you do this bell measurement, you teleport this state to the other leg of the EPR pair, right? That's a property of teleportation. What I'm doing different here is that when I do the bell discrimination, I'm cheering, right? I want the outcome to be 0, 0. Because if the outcome is different, I know that for teleportation to work, I would need to do a unitary here to correct the teleported state. I can't do a unitary in the past, right? So what I have to do here in the future is to hope that the outcome is going to be 0, 0. Because when this happens, I don't need to do anything to this other leg for this state to be exactly this state. Okay? So it's kind of a effective quantum time travel. That's the title of Svetlishny's paper, right? It's a way of doing using teleportation to simulate what would happen if you travel back in time. Julia Kiribella has written about that. I read the paper today. Okay? So this is a BSS scheme that was described by Bennett and Schumacher. I call it BSS. So, what can we say about this model? Okay? First, well, because of the properties of teleportation, state C is a state B prime. So this state is teleported there when this post selection works, when the right outcome comes up. Okay? And of course, since you have to hope that this thing works, it only works with the finite probability of success. So this travel back in time only works with the finite probability of success as well. Okay? So what the model says about time travel is this. The time machine is something that does this map 100% of the time. Right? So if you want to see what the time travel machine does, you see what this circuit gives you with a finite probability of success. And that's what the time machine does with one probability one. Okay? So this is a probabilistic simulation of what the time machine can do always, which is send a state here back in time. Okay? Questions? So, just one word about how this model deals with paradoxes, right? So this is the grandfather paradox. If you look at this little box, this is a transparency from Bennett Hall, so I stole it from there, okay? So this is a unitary, which is the grandfather paradox, because it's a control X. So if the state 0, 1 here represent dead or alive, right, you're controlling the life of the person in the past, right? So you're killing it or resurrecting it. Okay? So this is a state that gives you a paradox. So let's think of one as alive. Okay? So the guy is alive. There's something going on here. Right? And this something is that the guy was alive, went back in time, and killed it himself. Right? But if he killed himself, then this one became zero, and when he traveled back in time, he won't kill it himself. It's exactly the grandfather paradox, right? If he's alive, he kills himself, well, how come he could be alive? Right? So this doesn't work. And how does the model encode this? Okay? This state, when you simulate in the circuit, okay, do a bell projection here, do a bell step preparation here, bell state preparation, and work out what the probability of success is, you find that the probability of success for this particular state is zero. Okay? So states which get the combination of states and dynamics, which corresponds to the grandfather paradox, are ruled out here because you get a zero probability of success. Okay? So the model, let's say, this, the probabilistic simulation signals that you have a paradox by spitting out the probability of success zero. And hence, you don't know what the CPC does. Or maybe the CPC doesn't exist. That's a question of interpretation, what the simulation is telling you. Okay? So now we can compare what this new model, BSS, says about the CPC we studied in Deutsch. Right? So the CPC we studied with this one, remember? Now we can encode these two things, you know, the state going back in time will be a bad projection. And these two things, which is the state, you know, coming back in time and going back to normal, as a bell operation. So this is the circuit that does this. This is a way of creating a bell pair. This is a way of discriminating a bell pair, right? And you can see how the dynamics go. The state goes in, goes into the loop, goes back in time, comes out. And you want to see what the effect of this CTC was on this guy here, with the input, is the output of the input-output map that I'm studying, right? So you can work out what the circuit does, you know, by hand. And you find out that the circuit does exactly what measure-based computation demands it to do, okay? It implements the unit there. Right? So VCTC, if you analyze it using Deutsch, goes wrong. VCTC, if you analyze it using BSS, does exactly what one-way quantum computation tells it does. Right? So this is nice. This is an evidence, or at least a suggestion, that the CTC model that fits in with one-way quantum computation is BSS and not Deutsch. Okay? Now, of course, I introduced a model which is not so well known, this Bell Schumacher computation model. And there is a model that's very well known, which is Deutsch. So maybe we can compare a little bit the two. Okay? Deutsch demands self-consistency, right? That's good. We want that. Okay? But the way it imposes the self-consistency make artificial, what I call artificial mixed state solutions to appear. Okay? What's the problem? What makes these artificial state solutions appear? Because the state that Deutsch sends back in time is a mixed state. What we know, I mean, for quantum information, that if you have a mixed state, right, it can appear mixed because it's entangled with other systems. But what Deutsch sends back to the past is a mixed state stripped of its correlations. Okay? Because it just specifies that the state has to be such and such density matrix here, which has to be the same here. It doesn't say anything about what correlations of this state need to be. Okay? Whereas the teleportation thing, if you substitute here for a bell detection and here for bell operation, it sends the state back in time together with its correlations, because that's what teleportation does. If you teleport a qubit, it's teleported together with whatever it's entangled with it. Okay? The final state, final qubit, is going to be as entangled with whoever as the original state. And Deutsch's model doesn't do that. So teleportation has an extra ingredient, which is this possibility of teleporting the state back in time together with its correlations that Deutsch lacks. Okay? If you look at Deutsch's model here, and you look, okay, I'm going to just look at the input states and unitaries that give me a CTC which is not entangled. Right? For some combinations of input and unitary, you will get some solution, which is fixed state solution, which is not entangled. When you do that, Deutsch's model is BSS model. Okay? So you see that the problem appears when you have entanglement between Sorel CTC and the time preserving qubits. Right? It's that entanglement that's lost in Deutsch's model. Okay? Now, of course, there's lots you can do with this model. So this is just a description of one thing that we did in that paper. We looked at this, okay, what did we do? You start with the sun circuit, which has a closed time-like curve, okay? you can translate the secret into a measurement pattern, which is a sequence of qubits telling you which measurement you have to do on each one to implement what you want. Okay? Now, the trick is, you can do manipulations on a pattern, on a measurement pattern, that make it smaller, make it simpler, without changing the map that it implements. Okay? So these manipulations are called z-deletion and local complementation, which is an operation very useful in graph state manipulations. Okay? So we can do these kind of operations on the original measurement-based pattern to turn into a smaller one, which still does the same map as the original. Okay? So when we do that, you start with a circuit like this, and you end up with a circuit like this, because you start actually with the measurement-based version of this. You simplify the measurement-based version of this into the measurement-based version of this, right? Which is a simple thing. And of course, this circuit can be even simplified into one qubit circuit that implements the unit test for this example. Right? So, but you can do all these manipulations that I did here. You can do at the measurement pattern, on the measurement patterns themselves for any other DSS circuit. And sometimes when you do the manipulations, you go from a large circuit with closed time-like curves into a much smaller circuit that implements a certain map. Right? When you do that, then you found the circuit that simulates the original CTC deterministically. Okay? So it's the case with the example that I showed you, but I'm telling you that it's more general. You can start with some circuits, and you can test whether these kind of manipulations simplify these measurement patterns into one that that implements the same map as the original one, but which is deterministic. Because we saw that the BSS circuit simulation, the problem with it is that it's probabilistic, right? You only send the state back in time sometimes. But for some particular input states, some particular loops, you can do the thing and you find a simulation which is deterministic. So if you're interested in increasing the probability of success of this particular simulation, you have to do these manipulations using local complementation, and you actually find it out, okay? So it's something that you can do with some loops. But there's lots that you can do with this new model, right? Using stabilized techniques, you can study these BSS CTCs in more depth. Okay? So here are some of the conclusions. I hope I showed you that CTCs appear in measurement-based quantum computation, at least with that model, a little model that I worked out for you. Okay? Which was the simplest one-way computation you could do. So, since they appear in those models, then you have to say, okay, let's have a look at different models and see what they say about these CTCs. Right? So when you do that with the BSS, we see that the outcomes are exactly those of measurement-based quantum computation. Once you get that result, and you go back with hindsight, you find that's not so surprising, because measurement-based quantum computation can be given a version which depends only on teleportation. So what goes on in teleportation is in there, in the model, in the one-way model. So that's what we made more explicit with what we showed. Okay? And you can do the same analysis with Deutsch, and we see that Deutsch model predictions are in conflict with measurement-based quantum computation. Okay? So if you want, the measurement-based model offers one way of testing one model against the other. Okay? But you might say, perhaps you can say, oh, one-way quantum computation is just teleportation in disguise, and not like it, okay? Okay, that's fine if you don't like it. But I see it as one evidence that, at least for some particular states, you can see what the dynamics should be, and they don't agree with Deutsch. So it's a criticism of Deutsch's model. That's one way of interpreting our results, okay? Of course, there's lots of work that can be done to understand the BSS model better. So, Scott Aronson and John Watrous showed that if you get quantum mechanics plus Deutsch, then you get this very large computational class, T states. And interestingly, Scott Aronson was studying BSS model without knowing it in this paper. Because in this paper he asked, what happens if you have quantum mechanics and you can post-select? You can do measurements and decide, you know, because you have this power, that this outcome has to come up. Okay? It's a non-physical model. that enables you to do post-selection. And then he showed that if you do that, you get a very powerful thing. A person who can do that, do post-selection at will, in quantum mechanics, can solve problems in PP, which include NP. So it's a class above NP. Okay? But it's not as big as P-space. Okay, P-space pretty much includes everything. PP includes NP, but it's small. Everybody thinks it's smaller than P-space. Right? So this VSS model is associated with this class because VSS model amounts to two interpretations and post-selects on the results. That's what the CTC does. Right? So this magical person who can post-select at will is the CTC. Okay? And I'd like to point out that there's some recent work, even on experiments of teleportation motivated by this model, that was discussed here by Seth Roy. And actually today on the archive, there's a paper by Seth Roy and co-works which discussed more characteristics of this model. Okay? So there you can find lots of references to many other people who worked on time travel previously. So that's more or less what I wanted to say. This is just a little map of the complexity classes, the two that I was discussing, right? Deutsch seems to fit here. That's the John Walters, Scott Harrison result. And post-selection is here. And from here, you start with the smallest class. And as you go up, you have inclusion, right? I mean, this class contained the previous ones. So you see that PP includes NP, and P space includes PP, which includes NP. Quantum computation is here. BQP, and this is a probabilistic classical computation, BPT. Okay, so that's it. So that's it. Well, thank you for attention.
So, I'll start with a question. You mentioned early on Horowitz and Maldacena model. So I think I'm remembering correctly, they did calculations where they imagined a ball going into a wormhole, coming out and knocking itself out of the way from ever going into the wormhole.
No, that's not the paper, no.
That's not the paper?
No, no. These are some what you're mentioning is some considerations of how special are the initial conditions for you to get self-consistency. In that paper, they're trying to solve the black hole information paradox. So they're saying maybe inside the black hole, it does something which is like a measurement, something which is non-unitary, that appears inside the black hole, right? So if they do that, they link it to time travel. So it's kind of a roundabout way of presenting a model which uses measurements to induce some dynamics which is non-unitary, right? But I don't know much about that. So.
But let me ask a question about this other model. I'm not sure who wrote it down, but I remember reading just a summary of it, which said that if you do a Feynman path integral technique, you'll find that the amplitude for those sorts of trajectories is zero. It sounds very similar to the
VSS
model.
Yeah, I noticed that in the paper that Seth Log and co-workers put on the archive today, they argue that the VSS model, what I call the VSS model, fits in very well with path integral approaches, whereas Deutsch's don't. So I suppose he's linking the VSS model with this with what you're saying. Which seems to be an actual thing to do.
Mm-hmm. Other questions?
I'm not sure I understood well. So you showed that in some instances you can simplify the model and obtain something that is not probabilistic, but
yes,
deterministic.
Yes.
But in this instance that you presented, then there is, in the end, there is no closed time-like curve.
True.
So is this always the case that every time you get rid of the probabilistic, then in the end there was no?
Yes. For the cases I can say anything about, okay, are the cases which are analyzed by measure-based quantum computation. So in measure-based quantum computation, you're interested. You're interested in starting in implementing things deterministically. So the whole goal of the area is to find techniques that enable you to do a math deterministically, even though the measurements are probabilistic. Okay? So all the loops, I mean, all the circuits with time-like loops that I analyze, that I know how to deal with, will give you a circuit which works always.
So you can always get rid of the loops.
I do get rid of the loops, but I may, for example, have more. Well, in this example, you can see it. But the cost of doing it might be including new gates to do that dynamics. But you get rid of them. Yes. Okay. So maybe there are loops that do weirder things, right? I'm just looking at the little loops that I know how to deal with, and they correspond to things that you can unroll. Like I'm unrolling the loops and showing some classes which can be unrolled and give you a deterministic map, a unitary map. But those are the ones I can talk about, right? But they give you already a way to, you can already use those, that's what I argued, to compare different models.
Yeah. Maybe it's a related question, but I understood somehow, if you like to simulate cross-time curve loop, probabilistically you can do that this way. But my question is the other way around. Suppose I believe the cross-time loop curve somehow exists, and if I do somehow standard teleportation with probability 1/4, I kind of have the cross-time loop, right? As if I just simulate the quantum teleportation, then with probability 1/4, actually cross-time loop somehow works for me, and as if somehow this time cross-time curve existed, right? But then for the other case, how can I interpret outcomes if I somehow do believe that everything is somehow cross-term loop curve is kind of the hidden, but it actually exists, and then how do you somehow try to interpret?
I know. Yes, Tammy.
So when you use one, say circuit 1 to simulate circuit 2, you define the two circuits as being similar or
yes. So the equivalence is just that if you chose a certain set of input qubits and you're looking at a certain subset of outputs, you say that the circuits are equivalent if they implement the same map between those.
Just those.
Just those. Exactly.
And surely you don't include references that could be entangled to the input.
No.
Because if that's the case, then it still depends on whether the map is linear.
I see. Yeah, I didn't think about the references that you used in your argument, or how you would go about using this model to try to do something like that. I haven't thought about it. What happens? So I don't know. I don't know how powerful this model will be. The only evidence I have of its possible power is this post B2B connection.
Right. Charlie has been studying for a while. But I'm not sure if he's. I think he's rather skeptical whether it's possible or not. Yeah.
I don't have a set mind on that. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, I like very much the result of the deterministic simulation of the closed time curve by the measurement with computation. One thing I'm not completely clear about is how this is kind of a test of Deutsch models. Because it seems to me that the Deutsch model, by definition, is in contradiction with the standard quantum mechanics. So I think, I mean, at the theoretical level, it is already something that we know that gives different predictions.
Yes, I mean, you could say, okay, Deutsch is an extension of quantum mechanics. But if you talk about CTCs in the BSS model, if you have those CTCs, you would have a universe that's also an extension to quantum mechanics, mm-hmm. because you allow for this selection to happen. So it's just that these two extensions, both of them are extensions of quantum mechanics, and they're not equivalent, right? So you could say, I didn't expect them to be equivalent.
But that one formally is equivalent to quantum mechanics, the one you consider.
Because the whole difference between the extension and the probabilistic simulation mm-hmm. and the deterministic effect that the CTC does is the probability. But you may say, but this is just quantum mechanics. No, because if you allow this probability to go to 1, you're talking about a different model which is not quantum mechanics, and which allows for very powerful things to do. You can do very powerful things with that. So it is a non-trivial extension to quantum mechanics if you talk about a system that enables you to do those things deterministically.
Okay. Well, surely physically, but mathematically the equations are the same.
Yes, yes. If you mathematically you can study the problem, just, you know, forgetting about the probabilities, as long as it's different from zero. Mm-hmm. And then Deutsch is known not to fit in with that. I agree with you.
It's not non-linear.
I agree with you. For me, the result was surprising because I started from measurement-based quantum computation. I didn't know about BSS. I found those loops and I was trying to make sense using Deutsch. It didn't work. Okay. Then I found Svetlishny's paper and I was going back in time and trying to find who had proposed that. And that worked so well. Right? So I was surprised by the result because of that.
So I guess it's a very simple confusion about how it can possibly be appropriate both to say that MBQC is a test of Deutsch's model and that Deutsch's model is in conflict with it. I mean, so I thought that your original argument for why MBQC was a test of Deutsch's model is when you look at them and you do the appropriate transformations, you see that actually the two are isomorphic. And then I thought, well, that's really the only kind of argument there can be for this being in a but this counting as a test of Deutsch's model. But if that's what it takes for this to be a test of Deutsch's model, then it's sort of a priori impossible for the model to fail the test.
So yeah, true. I mean, you could start from the beginning saying Deutsch will never satisfy that. But, I mean, the argument is basically the transformations. I mean, you could also complain about the transformations that I do in this life. Okay? Because the transformations I do in this slide start from a circuit. I mean, you might say that circuit has no meaning, the top one, right? And you're doing formal manipulation on something that has no meaning. But I assign the meaning to this via the stabilizer manipulation that gave me that, see? So I don't know what step you could criticize if you don't like the final output. But maybe there's some step that people might not like, right? But to me, it seems very natural. The way that from the previous slide, from this manipulation, you get that this is equivalent to that. That's just an identity. Right? And then to translate this into a circuit which has a timeline loop. Mm. And then analyze what the timeline loop does in Deutsch.
Yeah.
That's the basis of the argument. But maybe it's not a convincing argument. We could argue more, right, about that. But it's at least something curious that tells you that took me into I needed a different model to account for that. But maybe, I don't know, we can argue, we can discuss about that.
Okay, well, let's thank Ernesto again.